And we're back with an all new season, year of Keep It. I'm Louis Vertel. Welcome to our ninth year of Keep It. We started in 2018 and I'm still talking. What on earth is there still to talk about? And yet I continue. Our guest host today is, there's a running motif on this show. We again have a cast member of the show Platonic. It is the fabulous, usually a front-facing comic, just generally, but also Platonic's own, Vinny Thomas. Welcome.
Yeah. Thank you, guys. Louis is bravely looking at me from the side, yes, which so rarely happens.
And by the way, I just want to say, after doing all these guest host shows where we're just looking one direction,
yeah,
I truly do have a best side, and it's the other side of my face. And I bravely use this side
you know
of my
that.
Face
you
to camera.
You crunched the numbers. Did you lay it out and everything?
We've asked all the viewers, and yeah, they're disturbed. I keep throwing this half of my face at them.
Yeah, I'm so sorry.
Now, we must talk about the most pressing issue of the day, which is Drag Race is back.
Yeah.
Do you follow Drag Race generally speaking? Do you care?
I do follow Drag Race generally. Yeah. I think for the last few years, if I'm being honest, I've fallen off a little bit. I think I definitely had a peak where I loved Drag Race, and now everything is Drag Race. Everything's so oversaturated Drag Race. There's Drag Race in every single country on earth.
It does feel a little bit like how my process with American Idol, which was I peaked with it at one point, and then after a while, I like watching it in groups. And that's sort of where I am with Drag Race. It's one experience to watch it with a ton of people, yeah, because we don't have another show like that right now.
Well, no, I mean, we're talk about it later, but Heated Rivalry is kind of like that now.
You watch that with a group.
Well, they put it on in bars. They put it on in high tops. You go and watch it.
Can I just say,
you
are
need
we
to
sure?
Be you need to be alone.
Yes.
You need to be alone for private reasons.
Look, I have to say, you know I don't believe in the binary.
Okay.
You know I don't believe in that.
Absolutely.
However, do I need to hear every woman in my life declare how horny they are at like the gay horny material?
Yeah, kind of.
You think so?
I think it's nice.
I think it's private
Everyone's
times.
Everyone's involved.
I think it's private times.
Anyway, Drag Race.
Yes.
Yeah, I think I've fallen off a little bit just because it's gotten a little difficult to keep up with everyone. And I don't know, it just gets repetitive. Like, it's kind of the same sometimes thing every season.
Well, I will say, when Joe Rogan was talking with Miley Cyrus that one time, he's like, the queens always do the same thing. They always jump into the splits. I'm not saying that's exactly true. It was a little true.
I'm not going to agree with that.
I'm going to say the queens do bring innovation and stuff, but you're right. Once you've seen, I'll say 10 seasons of this show, it's hard to feel like you're dredging up anything new. That said, we got something quite new this season, which was Cardi B was a guest judge. And can I tell you, you know what this show could use? A fourth judge who just sits there and says, I hated it or I liked it.
That's great. Yeah.
You know?
Finally. Finally, someone is a little bit brutal. I like when La Roche is a judge on that show, personally. I think he's a lot of fun. But Cardi B was awesome, too. Wait, another point I was going to make with regard to American Idol and why it's similar to American Idol, which is that American Idol stopped being interesting when they stopped putting the crazy people on American Idol to audition.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Because sometimes you would watch American Idol and you would earnestly not know who was going to go up there and what they were going to say. I think all the queens for the past few seasons have been much too reasonable and television has become too safe.
Yes.
Reality-wise.
Well, I think what's going to save us in that regard this season is that, as the show itself points out, a lot of these queens are over 30. And let me just say to the people who make Drag Race, please continue bringing on older queens for a couple of reasons. One, it's just way easier to root for a queen who got into this business probably before the age of social media.
Yeah.
And probably never expected to make a real living at this, let alone enter this kind of machine industry that being a drag queen has kind of become. But also, older queens, I'm sorry, and you know this means a lot to me, have heard of things. Oh my God, these children today. I mean, they just have no prayer knowing some of these older references. Like, we're clinging to Mommy Dearest. We're clinging to things that are older than, I mean, I'm telling you, the oldest thing these people know is the fucking show The Office. And I'm sorry, Jenna Fisher still looks like that.
And can I say something? I don't know that it's necessarily reflective of age. Do you know what I mean? I think they should go out of their way to find the witty, like, weird young queens who, like, do know about that. But you got to find the weird ones, right? Like, Jinx was making references that no person alive should be making.
No, it almost should be illegal. Yes.
Yeah, it's not right. Let's have that conversation. It's not right. But yeah, they need to get the zanier queens on. I don't think it's fair to put people who have only been on social media in front of a camera like that. I think pheromone is a good example of what happens when sometimes someone is like too nervous and they end up just kind of embarrassing themselves a little bit because they're not ready for that moment or whatever. I don't think. I felt bad for pheromone.
I also feel bad in a way for people like that who go on The Traitors too, where you're the only edit you can possibly get is either good guy or very bad guy.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
And so it's like, well, if you're not one of our two designated heroes for the season, guess what you are?
Screwed. You're screwed.
I did really enjoy this first episode, namely Cardi B. You know what? I always think of Michelle Visage as really direct and truth-telling. And not that she's not, but Cardi B sort of thrust to the fore a reminder that you could always go harder. Like, we still don't really have a Simon Cowell on that panel.
Look, I love Michelle Visage. Very hard name to say for me as someone with big teeth. But I do think sometimes her opinions are weird. Like, sometimes her opinions are like, I don't like green.
Right.
What does that mean?
Which is now, like, part of her constitution. Like, she's still bringing up that she doesn't like green.
Terrible. A terrible thing to say. It's not right. It's not true. It's not an opinion. It's not fair. Cardi B, she says she doesn't like something, and I immediately agree with it because it's not likable. Do you know what I mean? She's right. She's not only is she hating a little bit, but she's correct. You know? She's correct.
Yeah. Do you have a drag name?
Oh, are we having the, there's so many.
You do? Okay.
Oh, I mean, I have a list on my phone. I feel like every gay guy has a list on his phone of drag names, right?
Yeah, I have two.
Okay.
One is Willowy Swank. Just like a tall queen with long hair, that's who I would be. Also,
we got a head shake over here.
Oh, somebody's upset?
It's not good.
The producers are just like fully giving me like the Apollo cake.
Willowy does not rhyme with Hillary.
No, that's just it. It sounds like you have marbles in your mouth too, which I like. Willowy Swank. Yeah. See, you love it.
Why not Willowy Stank or something, right?
But I am Hillary Swank. I am a two-time Academy Award winning actress.
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I hear you.
Okay. And then also just as a name precisely. Like that's her first name. Like Rue refers to the girl. Precisely, what are you doing this episode? You know, it's just I like precisely as a name, as a moniker.
Okay, I have so many that I'm sure have been done before, but I think would be so fun. Like Rachel Slur.
Yes.
Right? Or Lydia Tupperware.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I love confusion about a pun, too.
They'll figure it
out.
Like
in the middle of it, it's just like, la, la, la.
It's a pun, but about something no one cares about, no one's interested in.
Yeah.
Right? Who cares about Tupperware? What are you talking about? Yeah, and just one word is fun, too, right? Like slime.
Yes.
Yeah. Would.
My friend Andy in Chicago says Andy he would just going. Be called the cunt. Yeah.
You're
just
the
like,
cunt?
Yeah, just like, why not? You know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And he just walks into a room and like pushes everything off a table immediately.
Yeah, that's it. One time I hooked up with somebody and they're like, oh, I do drag. And I was like, what's your name? What's your drag name? She goes, bird shit. I have never laughed harder. That is so funny.
Bird shit.
Bird shit.
Bird shit.
He said it like the heavens had emerged. Bird shit. See, it's like I can't explain it. Drag names are like life affirming.
Yeah, they're amazing. Split pee oops.
Yes.
Split pee oops.
A little nasty.
They
yes.
hate it. A little nasty for sure.
Have you ever performed in drag?
No, I dressed up as what's her face? Who's the trad wife influencer with the white husband who like makes cereal from scratch?
Oh, I can't know about that.
Oh, you do know about that.
Really? She's
surely
like a famous trad wife?
Nara Smith. I dressed up as Nara Smith for Halloween one year. No one recognized me as Nara Smith, but they did not recognize me as me. So I was shaking hands with friends I've been friends with for years because I think I just was, I don't want to brag, but pretty not clocky dressed up in my Nara Smith costume.
I was going to say, you got the dainty features and the I could see you doing drag really well.
Thank
Whereas
you so much.
I am in the, I'll say, Willem community, where when you have that like mandible that comes from like Dick Tracy, just like some people don't belong in drag. I mean, it just doesn't work as well.
Yeah, you have a Dick Tracy mandible. It was one of the first things I thought about you.
Yeah, you're like,
aha! Dick Tracy mandible. Dick for
mandible.
Sure, yeah.
Yes. At any rate, we have a very exciting episode. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Okay, we're going to get into, finally, a post-mortem on Heated Rivalry, which we talked about on an earlier episode, but since then has launched us into some, like, unforgettable queer experience that we all have been a part of. And by the way, their press tour is a part of it and still going on. So we're going to talk about just what that show accomplished, if we like it, what we think of Heated Rivalry. And then our guest today is, I think, one of my favorite actors. In fact, it would be kind of crazy if he weren't one of your favorite actors. It is the fabulous Ethan Hawke, who is Golden Globe nominated for his performance as Lawrence Hart in Blue Moon. We will talk about that movie. We will talk about a lot of his movies, his appreciation for movies. And then we will get into the new movie, Marty Supreme, starring Timothée Chalamet. He has been stomping through the awards.
Yeah.
He just won the Critics' Choice. And he's got that, what did he call it? His partner of 3 years, Kylie Jenner. I was like, partner of 3 years. I guess that is technically true. It felt so impersonal when he said it.
Well, I think, well, partners probably not in the romantic sense. Do you know what I mean? Like, there have been business partners for the past 3 years.
I guess. Yeah. So we'll talk about that movie and the return of my girl, Gwyneth Paltrow, who gives a performance in that movie we will discuss. Anyway, it's all coming up on Keep It. We'll be right back. Hey, what's the most slept on part of the First Amendment? Any guesses? I'm going with freedom of assembly, because in high school, I did not want to go to the assembly. And often I would just leave. Guess what I would do? Get a smoothie. Anyway, the answer is the Establishment Clause, the whole freedom of and from religion thing. Separation of church and state feels like one of those things we just take for granted as people who enjoy America. But you know, we have like a president who pretends that Merry Christmas is something every single person should be saying all the time, and actually nothing else. He would just prefer us say that to each other and then love him, I guess. The threat of Christian nationalism and rampant misuse of religious freedom is all over the place. If you're looking for tools on how to fight back against this, or just want to nerd out with other organizers, lawyers, policymakers, and folks inspired to protect freedom of and from religion, check out the Summit for Religious Freedom, or SURF. It's the leading event for anyone passionate about defending religious freedom, church-state separation, and the many critical rights that depend on them, taking place April 25th to 27th in Washington, D.C., and online. SURF brings together advocates from all walks of life, religious, non-religious, organizers with decades of experience, and folks just getting introduced to this work. SURF stands as a united front to protect LGBTQ plus rights, reproductive rights, public schools, and the values that uphold our democracy. At its core, SURF is about collaboration. It's an opportunity to learn from thought leaders and experts working in government, grassroots organizing, and nonprofits focused on religious freedom. It's a big tent movement confronting the growing threats of Christian nationalists and extremists working to force their narrow beliefs on everyone. Together, attendees strategize, learn, and build the momentum needed to preserve equality, freedom, and democracy for all. Learn more about how you can get involved in this critical fight by visiting thesrf.org. That's thesrf.org.
A snarl, and they're upon him. An ancient forest spirit at his heels. The only escape is in the Toyota BZ Woodland. John Cho stars in Camping. Test drive Toyota's new all-electric family today. Toyota, let's go places.
Some of you may have thought December 25th was Christmas, but the best of us observed The Cottage Eve. Of course, we're talking about the season finale of Heated Rivalry, a show that seemingly everyone is hot over. We've talked about the show's first few episodes, but now we're going to get into the season as a whole and where the season stacks up against our other favorite gay TV shows. So, Vinny, most importantly, are you a Hollander girl or a Rosenhoff girl?
Oh, I think I'm a Hollander girl for sure, in the sense that there's something about Hollander that's a little bit empty. You know what I mean?
Right.
And he's maybe a little bit boring sometimes. You know what I mean? I'm that. I'm staying at home. I'm not in the clubs pursing my lips. You know, I'm at home reading book.
Can I tell you what, tell you what I'm exactly doing? In the club pursing lips. Yeah, that is constantly. Who I am. I am definitely a Rosenhoff person. I think because I like how sure he is in a Russian, Eastern European way, but then also, it's not like he's invulnerable. You know, like he has his moments, he's still capable of opening up. So yeah. I really appreciate that about that character.
I appreciate that actor went crazy on that role, by
Excuse
the way.
Excuse me, that's one of the revelations of this TV show. When we first watched the first couple episodes, I think we all agreed it was entertaining and very sexy, but it did not really feel like an acting showcase. By the end of the show, I thought this could be no two other actors. They nailed these roles. They're so believable, which, by the way, most of the show is just the two of them talking. Like, there's no B story. You know, like the idea that they can occupy a full hour and just speak to each other and it's never boring.
Exactly.
I think that's fucking wild.
And it could have been very easily. I mean, Hollander's character is, I think, in the book, autistic.
Yeah.
And he portrays him as autistic, but never in a way that feels like bland or like a caricature. Just he's a normal guy.
Or awards bait or something.
Or awards bait. Yeah. You know what I mean? He does a great job. And then, I don't know their names.
Connor Story is Ilya, and then Hudson Williams plays Shane Hollander.
Ilya, Connor Story learned Russian for that role. He did not speak Russian before, And there's something about his lip posture, even the way he, like, he eats food is, like, Russian. Like, the way he's always like this, it like, literally, he's, like, he's a Russian guy. He became Russian for this thing. That was amazing, you know? A lesser person, me, would have done a caricature.
Well, also, by the way, when the show starts, you kind of wonder if it's a Russian caricature because it sort of feels like maybe an easy accent to do. But then as the show goes on, to say it gets more difficult is tip of the iceberg. When he does that full monologue in Russian, is that the second to last episode on
there's
the
no
phone?
Way, there's no way to know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they truly all blend together. It is one seamless cinematic experience. Yeah. It's so impressive. And like in the press, apparently his Russian interpreter heard him do it in one take and then thought, yep, it's all usable. So he's got some like preternatural Meryl Streep-like ability to tap into whatever brogue or accent you throw at him.
I think it's amazing that that show blew up, you know? I think every now and then there's a show that I'm like, oh, I did not see this coming.
Right.
And this was that one. I don't think anyone did. I don't think, you know, the cast, anyone saw it coming like for it to blow up in this way. But women love romance.
Excuse me, it's from the Crave Network. What the hell is that?
Crave Network.
It sounds like, I don't know, some like down low sex club you go to in like Vancouver. I was at the Crave Network last night.
The Crave Network, truly the like underground railroad for like horny gay guys.
Yes.
That's what we call it, is the Crave Network.
What would you say is your favorite scene on the show?
I really like the other couple. I like the couple when he came in.
I'm always interested in this take. Why? Interesting.
Well, I don't know. That one felt like, maybe it's because it feels attainable, right? Like he's this famous hockey player, this sports guy is just going in and seeing this barista and falling in love with his barista, right? So you can put yourself into the shoes of the barista in a way that you can't with the romance between the two hockey players, right? There's a little more fantasy. There's a little more accessibility to that fantasy, I think, than to the two sports guys.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
And also, their relationship is pretty simple. It's just they like each other and they would like to spend time at home.
Yeah.
You know?
And I was shocked when I found out it was a book, but it all kind of made sense. I didn't know it was a book first. But then once I saw the other two gay hockey players, I was like, oh, everyone's gay. This is going to be like a bunch of gay romances within hockey. This had to have been a book. And it was a book. And I love gay romance novels. I listen to a gay romance novel whenever I go on a road trip.
Really?
Amazing, yeah.
Oh, do you have any favorites? Because I know nothing in this regard.
Oh, yeah. There's a werewolf series called The Kincaid Pack. All of these are written, by the way, by women, which I think is incredible.
No, women are superheroes in this genre. Yeah.
Called The Kincaid Pack. And it's all about, I think the first one is called the Alpha and His King or something.
I'm sure it's not explicit at all.
Oh, it's ridiculous.
Yeah. I'm sure orifices are getting claimed.
Orifices are getting claimed. And it's not necessarily hot to me. For me, it's like more interesting. But for some people, I imagine it really is.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's fun. Give them a listen whenever you go on a road trip.
Wow. I think my favorite scene in the whole show, I love the one where he just goes over to his house. This is like episode 4, I think. And I'm talking about Shane visiting Ilya. And they're just chilling. It's like, it's basically the scene where they realize they're something more is happening. Like they hook up. And by the way, again, I must congratulate the show for how hard they go with the sex and like never relented. You know, it's just like that to me is novel. You know, even on all my favorite gay TV shows, I just didn't see a lot of that. And by the way, I know there was a whole hubbub about whether or not the sex on these shows was believable. Yes, it was. I feel like everybody has had sex that kind of looks like this.
I think it's fine. I also really don't care if sex on television is believable. Am I weird? Like I don't need it to be. I don't care about the believability of sex, you know? I don't need to see the whole preamble to like, and also sex for everyone is so different. Everyone's into weird shit. Do you know what I mean? So I guess I don't agree with that. And it was good. It was hot. It was nice.
Precisely. Constantly erotic, et cetera. But by the
constantly
way.
Constantly erotic, et cetera.
My other underground Vancouver sex network I take part in. But the other thing I'm impressed with is their interviews for this. To me, it's both interesting how they remain very candid about, for instance, like the queer TV shows and movies they've grown up watching, et cetera, while also not giving away their sexual orientation. Not that I'm saying they need to do it. Like, for instance, if I were a part of this TV show, I'd be talking constantly about all the gay shit I've been up to. I just think it would be relevant. But you don't have to. And the fact that they can get around it while still seeming like they're actually giving sincere, thoughtful responses is kind of rad. I don't know. Like, to honestly, me, they're pulling off something I didn't expect.
Look, and I see why they're not being, like, explicit about it. At the end of the day, it does still, if you're, like, a gay actor and you're constantly talking about being gay off screen, it sometimes, I think, will affect your, like, the way casting people see you. And it, unfortunately, will affect their choices.
Yeah.
So I think Connor's probably the gay one, right?
Who's to say?
Who's to say?
Yes.
No one is to say. But I think he's making a good choice because I think he's well poised to become kind of the Heath Ledger of this generation. Do you know what I mean?
Well, also, by the way, I mean, like, that's kind of the one thing I wish these two actors could talk about if they were being more open, which is, isn't it kind of fucking suck that I might not be able to do my job because I'm being open about who I am?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's just like, to me, that's a reason to not take part in a profession. You know what I mean? Like, that means acting is not good enough for me, if that's what the case is.
I also do think they're part of the reason they're doing so well at the interviews and why they're so, I don't know, they seem so cool and, like, normal is because, I don't know, they didn't expect this show to blow up. So they're grounded, normal people.
Right.
Imagine
right.
if they made this show with two famous actors, how much more annoying and weird and cold the interviews would be, I guess.
Right. Also, I think it really draws you into the two of them because they clearly have an understanding with each other. Like, oh, we're just not going to go there. And that makes you believe they're really good friends, you know, that they could just, like, be level with each other and say, hey, we're not going to talk about the specifics of our love lives. Yes, we're going to use these hands to illustrate it. And yet still talk really extensively about how incredible it was to work on this show. Yeah. I do feel like I will probably rewatch it too, which I'm surprised to say. I can't think of much TV. Narrative television.
I can see you rewatching it. He's going to, like, fast forward to a few, like, select scenes.
Oh, right.
I'm probably going to do several rewatches through the year, I bet. Yeah.
Well, by the way, again, I'm not somebody who ever craved erotic mainstream content. I didn't think it was that necessary. Other than, I love
foremost,
an erotic thriller.
I know that's right.
Yes.
Yeah.
I love an erotic thriller. I love people, like, stabbed after having, you know, a fatal attraction like affair, but that's it.
Work. Yeah, absolutely.
You know,
I love people stabbed.
Dang.
Yeah.
What are your favorite gay TV shows? Past, present, future?
Well, I have to say, wait, favorite or most important?
Oh, either could be true.
Okay. There are some shows that I would qualify as gay that maybe aren't necessarily, like, gay. Do you know what I mean? Like Cat Dog.
They are. Let's talk about the Cat Dog.
Yeah, let's have a conversation about the
and
Cat
who,
Dog.
And who's tapping the Cat Dog?
Yeah. Well, is it even possible?
That's
is
what that I want to know.
Yeah. I don't know. I think Cat Dog is queer. I think Cat Dog is, like, a little bit asexual, but queer in the sense that they are half cat, half dog. I think it's allegorical. I think there was a whole period where Nickelodeon was making crazy, like, weird shows.
You're exactly right. Like, the late 90s, even after they had crazy shows like The Adventures of Pete and Pete, and you're talking about these kind of pre-SpongeBob, but into SpongeBob.
Exactly.
Era.
SpongeBob came out of this era. It was,
you know what? You know who's tapping Cat Dog? SpongeBob.
Oh, big time.
First of all,
I was going to do the laugh. I had to stop myself from doing the laugh.
Right. No, I mean, porous. I mean, just it speaks for itself.
Yeah, absolutely. He's riddled with holes.
Yes,
absolutely.
Ding.
Yeah. Ding.
I know, right. Cat Dog, that was your first instinct when answering,
like,
this question.
Well, I'm talking about, like, I don't know. What could I say? I could sit here, I could be like, Glee. I actually think Glee was really heroic. Mm. And, like, I liked Glee. I watched Glee a lot.
Yeah.
And I think Glee was kind of like a formative gay show. But I don't know if it's like, I don't know if I'd call it one of my favorite, like, gay shows, you know? Sense8 is fun.
Now, Sense8 is I think that has a little bit of everything. It's a really interesting show, really sexy show, and also queer show, like, explicitly queer show. That should be revisited. Have you watched the original Queer as Folk at all?
No.
Here's what I'll say about that. I love that it was a show that represented exactly the time it was in, and we do not have a lot of early 2000s representative anything. Like, who thinks about that time in history? And it's like the gay guys on that show will go to a party and realize, oh, it's a bareback party. I should probably leave.
Yeah.
Like, you know, so it takes you back to that time in history. That's really interesting. And I love the performances on that show. That show could be both really rowdy and emotional. So I do think it's a heated rivalry precursor in that way.
Okay, I'm going to have to watch Queer as Folk.
I mean, that's a show people watch and then, like,
did,
like,
it get remade?
Yes.
You said the original. Okay.
Yeah,
gotcha.
There was one a couple years ago that took place in New Orleans. And Kim Cattrall was on it. We sometimes keep trying with her. But not that hard. What's another show you really love?
6 feet under. Does that count?
Oh, totally.
6 feet under, I feel like counts as a gay show. While everyone on it is gay, there's only really, I think, one gay character. Or two, right, I guess, yeah, technically. But it just feels gay. It feels gay to watch. Something about it is very, like, something about it is sapphic, tonally.
And also, I mean, I think the definitive best ending of a TV show in history.
Oh, it was really good. I cried. And what's gayer than crying?
Yeah. You're right. It's the gayest show of all time.
Yeah.
I think another show I have to bring up is Looking. Did you watch Looking when it aired?
I didn't watch Looking. No, I need to watch Looking.
I'll say this. Unlike Heated Rivalry, which definitely is reaching for fantasy in certain regards, just like the heatedness of their whole thing feels like it's out of a novel, this was not going for fantasy in any way. Like, it was just like, here is somebody's life. Here are the friends they hang out with and sort of the foibles of this rather ordinary life. We need that too. I was psyched for that to exist. And Jonathan Groff was fabulous. It couldn't have been anybody else. I was a hater of this show when it first aired because I thought it was too boring. But you know what? Most lives are a little boring. And if you're going for this journalistic perspective of here's what it's like to live like this, it was a really well done show.
Sometimes gay men who are naturally inclined to hate themselves in media, I think sometimes a little bit. I think Looking might have been too grounded. And yeah, so that's, gay guys are like, I don't want to watch this, you know?
Right. Well, yeah, I don't think people like to think of themselves as boring. Yeah. So I think when watching that show, which was just very content to be, regular, to go with the pace it was, you know, maybe it read to certain people as you're underselling what our lives are like. I have no idea.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like, not every show should be a Sex and the City whiz bang as Sex and the City. So
there should have been some element of magic in Looking. I think we can both agree. I think they should have been able to make fire with their hands or something. That would have been a great show.
You really have set something on fire with Cat Dog, though. In terms of just crazy characters you connect with for some reason who probably are a little gay-coded ultimately.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think they knew what they were doing, you know, big time. Yeah.
I'm just saying, like old Bewitched, like Aunt and Dora on that show. I mean, like, you also had Uncle Arthur played by the fabulous and definitely gay Paul Lynde. But just, there are characters that ignite something in you as a person that separates you from straight people. And I do feel like that's kind of what you're talking about.
I mean, there's also, and I think this is like a generation maybe a little bit after us, but the entire suite of like tender queer shows, when you had like Steven Universe.
Oh, yeah, right.
Which I think is also like very formative for that generation. But I didn't watch Steven Universe.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to, though.
Are you cartoon oriented, period?
No, I don't think so.
Yeah, I can't do it.
I was just really,
I loved Daria, which is also kind of a
Daria's
queer show.
Daria's a queer show. Yeah, yeah. I put Daria in the queer category. What else would I do? Daria's, yeah. Oh, American Dad. American Dad's a gay show.
One of my best friends, Nico, that is his gay show. He brings up American Dad constantly and the references therein. It is a show full of references, which is gay.
American Dad is funny. I think it's the funniest thing Seth MacFarlane has ever made. And Roger, that homosexual alien in American Dad, really is the fantasy of every gay person in the world. He puts on little wigs. He's mean. He hits people. He's drinking constantly. He's so strange and funny. And I'm like, oh, I would like to be a live action version of Roger.
You brought up Heath Ledger earlier. Were you a Brokeback Mountain person?
Yeah, I was definitely a Brokeback. I was the person when it came on TV, I was the kid watching it on TV. And then I would go back to something else and I'd have the previous button ready on my remote. So that if my parents walked into the room, I would slam previous and I'd be watching like a documentary about whales or something.
My God, the whole acuity with the remote, that's so old school. Like, we don't have that anymore.
No.
Like, kids aren't switching back between channels now, right?
No. And they've lost character because of it, I think, in a really big way.
Yeah. No, I mean, like, I remember commanding a television set that way and being like, I know what I'm watching and I know what's going to happen when you leave the room, Mom.
You know, you looking around the room as if she's in here is actually really great.
Yeah, right. No,
I love Brokeback Mountain.
We actually talked about it recently. I think that movie holds up in every way. Yeah. It is a fabulous movie.
And another movie where it was criticized for not having realistic sex. Do you remember there was like a whole debacle?
Right.
It was like a social media thing where everyone's like, who does that? He just ate beans all night.
Like, well, it's also like, guys, I don't think they're like attuned to like the finer qualities of sex yet. Like, both those guys are like amateurish. Even the Jake Gyllenhaal character, who is probably more experienced.
Yeah.
You know. Virgil. I could talk about that all day. Also, Anna Faris is in that movie.
Oh, she's great.
Yes.
I love Anna Faris.
Now, The L Word, a show I have not seen the entire way through. First of all, important just for the Jennifer Beals quotient. We needed to give her something after Flashdance, and I'm glad it was that. Will and Grace, I will say, when I was in high school, you could not get around, if you were an out queer person, being called either a Will or a Jack. And for that reason alone, it has to be an important show, because literally it changed people's brains into thinking that gay people were one of two categories of thin white guy on primetime.
I didn't see Will and Grace. In many ways, I feel like I'm media illiterate when it comes to gay television. I've seen like three of the shows on this list. But they rebooted it, right? Did you watch the reboot?
Yes, and they went even broader with it somehow. Like, they really wanted to bring back the multicam feel of like, oh, well, you know, Karen's trapped in the shower. Like, they really wanted that I Love Lucy, like, insane feeling.
I miss multicams. I miss when, like, a celebrity walks into the room and everyone applauds and they're like, ah!
Oh, yeah. Or if you remember Family Matters with Urkel, like, if somebody was hot,
Family Matters.
Somebody would walk into the room, you know, like this, and everyone would go, ah!
Family Matters, also a gay show. Urkel, a little bit homosexual.
Please. And he loved cheese.
Yeah. Urkel as a little gay guy who loved cheese. And absolutely.
But also, he was so obsessed with Laura, who was so somebody a gay guy likes. Because she was like withering and bitchy.
Withering?
Like, she'd be like, Steve, get out of here.
You can't call people withering. It's not right.
It was Withering Heights up there.
Oh,
yeah.
My God. Yeah. Sometimes Ryan Murphy makes things that are like the kind of clean movie versions of whatever the thing is. And I think Pose is an example of that. He did that with Ballroom, where he makes it very clear.
Yes.
Right. I watch Pose just for the moments where they read. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, like, certainly. The funniest parts of the show.
Exactly. Yeah. When they're like in a restaurant or, oh my God, in the first episode, they're stealing from an art museum. That was one of the most insane things in the world. I think that actually was a brilliant opening for that show. For
totally.
Them to break into an art museum, steal a bunch of royal outfits, and then walk in the ballroom with them. I thought
it
was great.
I just saw Michaela J. Rodriguez over the weekend, like ran into her. This woman looks exactly like a cross between Cher and Donna Summer. It is so shocking. I'm like, there they are, Cher and Donna Summer. They're here. One person.
Which character was she on Pose? Which character was she on Pose?
What is that character's name? Blanca.
Blanca. Yeah, okay. I do know what you're talking about now. And yes, you're absolutely right. She does look like Cher. Amazing.
I did love Heartstopper when I watched it. Just like, you know, like, it's important for, you know, gay kids to have the quaintest possible romances to watch too. And it was very aw shucksy. And sometimes, you know, there's an innocence about us too.
Sometimes
hard to believe.
Sometimes I can't watch aw shucks stuff because I do this. I go, oh, brother. You know what I mean? I go, oh, brother. I don't want to watch this. I think it's just too saccharine sometimes.
It was a little saccharine.
Yeah.
But Olivia, I was like, why is Olivia Colman on this show? Like, this Oscar winner is dropping into this. Oh, wait, she gets the big scene where she loves the gay kid. Now I get it.
Oh, those are great scenes. When the parent knew the whole time.
Yeah.
Love that.
The Jennifer Garner in Love, Simon or whatever.
Yeah.
When she's like, shut the fuck up, my gay kid, or whatever she says.
Yeah, she uses the F slur 5 times. Yeah. And she like smiles
fuck
and hugs
you,
him.
You're gay, I love you, she says. Yeah. Well, if we had to rank the 5 best gay shows of all time, I'm going to say Will and Grace is the most important. In terms of, like, Joe Biden even bringing it up and saying it's important. Not that that means a lot.
And I would say, for me, the most important... Wait, do we have to agree, yeah?
Yeah, you can fight for something, though.
Okay, I'm going to fight for, obviously, Cat Dog.
Okay, you lost.
Cat Dog is number one. Let's go ahead and put a number one by Cat Dog.
Okay,
it's actually amazing.
Cat Dog.
I think that's amazing. It's the
Kennedy Center honoree Cat Dog.
Exactly. That's like, that is a gay show. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
Will and Grace is like Pete Buttigieg gay. Cat Dog is like Silver Lake gay.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, it makes perfect sense now.
Thank you.
I am going to go Will and Grace. And then I will go Queer as Folk. And then Sense 8 for the daringness of it. And then let's do Pose. And then I'm going to put Heated Rivalry number 5.
Okay, gotcha. I think I'm going to do Sense8 for 2. And then I'm going to do this this documentary about parasites called Monsters Inside Me.
Oh, duh.
On the Discovery Channel for number 3. And then after that, probably The Voice.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
That does have a lot of gay contestants.
The Voice is very gay. There's like a lot of heroes, kind of hometown heroes, hometown homosexual heroes on The Voice.
To watch the gay contestant reach out to the female pop star they want and ignore Blake Shelton.
There's also
that is important.
There's also something very gay about how so many people have been on that show, but no one has emerged as a star out of it. You know what I mean?
That's not
that
really
show has been going on for 15 years, but no one has gotten famous from it. It's gay yearning, I think, at its core is The Voice.
Yeah.
And for number 5, Glee. Yeah.
Anytime Gwyneth Paltrow gets to sing Party All the Time, I'm there.
I'm so removed from, I guess, a normal high school experience. Is that what it was like? In a, like, I don't know.
Oh, it's a documentary. Yeah.
Everyone I talked to is like very close with their teachers in a way that is at least a little reminiscent of Glee. I was not friends with. There's a stereotype online where everyone's like, oh, the gay guy's best friends with his English teacher. No, I wasn't.
Yeah, right.
Me and Phyllis were not talking. I wasn't hanging out with her.
But you did know her name was Phyllis.
Well, of course I knew her name was Phyllis. Of course I knew her name was Phyllis.
There was a latent friendship possibility there. You simply passed it up.
Oh, you think?
Yeah.
Damn.
Okay, anyway, what are your favorite gay shows? Tell us what they are. We'll be right back with more Keep It. But before that, some housekeeping. The Crooked Store is starting the year on a high note by adding a bunch of new items for sale. Celebrate getting through 2025 and gear up for the midterms by snagging the merch you've been eyeing for less. Head to crooked.com/store to shop. All right, when we're back, we're joined by the fabulous Ethan Hawke. This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Someone threw the phrase New Year, New You at me recently, and some of us might be having a momentous birthday next year. So what I'm trying to do in this era of a new me is survive this year, because the ego threat of it all and the ego hit of it all is bone chilling. Meanwhile, the new year doesn't require a new you, actually. Maybe just a less burdened you. Therapy can help more easily identify what weighs you down or holds you back by offering an unbiased perspective to better understand your relationships, motivations, and emotions. I would not say I have a compulsion for perfection. I'm not a perfectionist. But I think in the next year, I'm going to let go of even being any good at all. And you can pretend it's an artistic choice I made that's really strong. Whatever you're working on in 2026, BetterHelp is there for you. BetterHelp therapists work according to a strict code of conduct and are fully licensed in the U.S. And BetterHelp does the initial matching work for you so you can focus on your therapy goals. A short questionnaire helps identify your needs and preferences, and BetterHelp's 12-plus years of experience and industry-leading match fulfillment rate means they typically get it right the first time. If you aren't happy with your match, switch to a different therapist at any time from their tailored recs. With over 30,000 therapists, BetterHelp is one of the world's largest online therapy platforms. Having served over 5 million people globally, and it works with an average rating of 4.9 out of 5 for a live session based on over 1.7 million client reviews. BetterHelp makes it easy to get matched online with a qualified therapist. Sign up and get 10% off at betterhelp.com/keepit. That's betterhelp.com/keepit. This week's guest truly needs no introduction, but if I simply must, the actor before me is inimitable. In every sense of the word, for decades, he has been an unshakable force in projects like the Before Trilogy and Training Day, to more recent accomplishments like FX's The Lowdown, which I loved. Today, he's here to discuss his role as lyricist Lawrence Hart in the biopic Blue Moon. Please welcome to Keep It, Ethan Hawke.
Hey, thanks for having me, man.
I am thrilled to talk to you. I love this movie. I was just saying to the crew here, we get so few Bitter Queen movies. Oh, my God.
It's not enough in the world.
I'm telling you, like, Gods and Monsters, you know, these movies where it's like, let's meet a gay guy who is just going through some rancor, you know?
Yeah, but also with a blistering intellect.
Yes.
Who knows how to just cut down everybody, including himself.
Precisely. No, I was thinking, the first thing that I love about this movie is that it immediately immerses you in a time and place. It's the 1940s. And his relationship with Richard Rodgers is coming to an end. Richard Rodgers is about to revolutionize musical theater with Oscar Hammerstein. Hart is being left behind. But there's this air of sophistication and Broadway glamour that is still so immaculate about this movie. What did you do to put yourself in that space to make this movie feel so real?
Well, the first thing I did was be born, because ever since I've been born, I love this space. I love the theater. You know, there's an inner nerd in me that from the first time I saw a play, I wanted to be part of that. I would meet older actors and dream of being in rehearsal rooms and opening night parties. And I remember the first time I went to Broadway feeling like it was a porthole to heaven, you know, just seeing. So with an intrinsic just love of that world that I've just possessed as a kid. When I got this script, it was like candy, you know? I mean, Andrew Scott and I both have grown up and lived our life inside the pursuit of people like Rodgers and Hart. You know, I mean, I've been at these opening night parties. I've met people like that, big time Broadway, fabulous people. And I've seen their intellect and I've seen the passion and dedication and the life commitment and the kind of person who thinks it's a sin against God to use the wrong word. You know, the wrong word choice is an offense to Dionysus, you know. So I love these people. And luckily for me, this script was out of sight. From the first time I read it, I was like, we have to make this movie. What would it be like if we could put this on screen? Because the writing is so good. The research is so deep. So that part was easy.
Also, something that's interesting about this is you're, again, working with Richard Linklater, who you've worked with on some of our, I'll just say, everybody in the world's favorite movies, movies we all love. But you also have lots of new collaborations in this. You just mentioned Andrew Scott. What was that combination like of both old-time friends and collaborators and brand-new people to the fold?
Did you ever see the Beatles doc, Get Back?
Oh, sure. A few years ago. Yeah.
Yeah. You remember how, like, there's this scene where the Beatles are sitting in the room and they're just kind of bickering and not sure what to do. And all of a sudden, Billy Preston walks in and they're all like keen to be Billy Preston's best friend or be the Beatle that Billy Preston likes the most. And they start putting on a better version of themselves, the less bitchy, complacent version of themselves. And then before you know it, they're rocking and rolling, right? Well, I'm not comparing Rick and I to the Beatles, but I say that we aspire for that kind of energy. And there was something about Andrew coming on set, and Margaret Qualley, I have to say. Bobby Cannavale, Rick, and I have known each other a long time. Robert Kaplow, the writer, we've all known each other a long time. And that can be great because of a shorthand and a shared vision and all that kind of stuff. But it also can be cumbersome because we often put on our best self with a new crush, right? And Andrew walks in, and we all want him to think we're the smartest one of the group, you know? And he's so bright, and he's so funny, and he comes with the same kind of skill set, the same love of the same tradition that I do. And so we got along great, and he pushed Rick, and Rick pushed him, and he pushed me, and it, all of a sudden, we weren't making Boyhood again, we were making Blue Moon.
Oh, fabulous. In constructing the character of Hart, who has such a specific, as I said, bitterness to him the minute we meet him in this movie, did you add these kind of, I'll call them affects, one at a time? How did you construct what this character would actually sound like? I was surprised to realize that there's quite a bit of footage of Hart from the time. Like you can watch him collaborating with Rodgers in the 1920s.
I know. And you learn a lot from that, but also a lot of that is posed, right? You know, they're very careful that Larry is standing and Rodgers is seated. Most of that footage, it's very interesting how choreographed some of that stuff is. But you also see how funny is most of that footage, he's much younger than he was at the end of his life.
Mm-hmm.
And so I saw all of it. I felt liberated by the fact that 97% of humanity has not seen this footage. They don't have any preconceived notions about what Larry Hart sounds like or feels like. I mostly was drawing on people in my own life. When I was starting, a lot of my mentors were men, older men of the theater with this kind of intellect and this kind of very specific sense of integrity. And I was drawing a lot on a specific people I knew who reminded me of what I thought Larry Hart would be like. And luckily, there's an amazing biography called A Ship Without a Sail that is just like full of details of what he was like, how he smoked cigars, what kind of jokes he thought were funny, lots of things people said about him. And I just tried to let that filter through my imagination. But I also had other things like this is a couple months before he died, right? So he has arthritis. He's not at his best. He's trying to sober up and be at his best to win Rodgers back. I don't know. I just tried to use everything I had.
On that note, I was wondering if this was actually one of the most difficult things you've ever done because it's so much dialogue. And this person is basically decomposing before our eyes, both, you know, physically, as you just said, but also, you know, he's sort of giving into his own misery in a way. And the combination of all that feels very daunting. I was wondering if this was one of the most kind of difficult roles you've ever had to take.
It definitely was. I didn't see it coming either. I loved the script so much. I just thought it would be really fun. And then I realized how many obstacles there were. You know, Rick was very clear. He spent years of his life editing my performances, so he knows every trick in my toolbox. And he didn't want to see any of them. Mm. He had this thing with me that he said before we started is, I don't want to see you until we wrap. Meaning, I want to see Larry Hart. And when we do certain takes and things would go well, or I felt they went well, he'd come over to me and say, hey, I saw you. You know, and that meant that this is not good.
Wow.
So the way Larry speaks, what his sense of a joke is, certain vocal affectations, things that were my go-to moves, hand gestures, things I've done throughout my life, things like Rick wanted to erase them all. It was kind of a deductive process where at first we just basically got rid of me. And I tried to be as simple as possible. And once enough was reduced, we could start to find what Larry's playfulness might be and make sure it was different than Ethan's. You know, that combined with the hair and makeup and the height and everything like that, it was definitely the two most difficult jobs of my life, I think, were Larry Hart and John Brown. You know, this thing I did, Good Lord Bird. Those are the two hardest things.
This role does not remind me of a single other thing you've ever done. Like the way you're speaking, the way you're interacting with other characters. So it feels like it must have been incredibly daunting to delete all of yourself.
It was. I had this kind of really strange year last year where Sterling Harjo gave me a fastball down the middle, like a part I felt born to play. It was like right in my wheelhouse and it was so much fun. So I got to do that. And then Rick was asking me to hit like a curveball on the, you know, slightly out of the box. You know, it was like the hardest pitch to hit I've ever faced. And I did them both in the same year. And it was a great, great experience.
I hope to adopt this as a new gay euphemism. He's a curveball out of the box, if you will.
Beautiful one.
I want to say also, your performance is obviously a huge contender this award season. I've seen you speak so passionately about movies and the joy of making movies and so many great mentors you've had over the years. How do you contend with something like award season, which commodifies movies in kind of a different way? Is it a fun time for you? Or do you have to kind of remind yourself why you're in the business as you go through the rigmarole of campaigning for an award?
It's active spiritual work, you know, because selling yourself doesn't feel good. And yet at the same time, you have to kind of see yourself as an ambassador for film and not fall into the competition aspect of it, but see the value that the competition has for audiences. We want the world to care about movies. So what's great about the Oscars and all these different awards shows is it makes people want to see movies. Hey, I didn't even see that movie. I want to see that movie. Why are they saying Amanda Seyfried's so great in that movie? I haven't even heard of that movie. I want to see that movie. What's that Rose Byrne movie, you know? Wagner Mora, who's he? I want, you know, I mean, so it's all good for the movies. And you have to really realize that we're all working for film. And if you get yourself in that mindset, well, okay, wouldn't it be awesome if a little movie like Blue Moon would just, because what I love about Blue Moon is it assumes an intelligence on the part of the audience that is rather uncommon. You know, it treats you as an equal. And I feel proud of it. And I want movies like this to get made, right? I'm grateful to the people who financed the film, right? I mean, I'm really grateful to them and I want them to make their money back and I want them to be glad they made it. So I've got to play this game. But I also can't get confused about like, am I in competition with my peers? No, it's a giant kind of victory lap designed. So you have to walk yourself through it. Does that make sense?
Totally. And I was just going to ask also, does this mean you've seen a lot of these other movies that have come out recently? You seem like someone who's just up on movies, period. Like it'd be very rare if there was a time you weren't up on things.
Well, I love movies. Sometimes I get more busy than I want to be and I get annoyed, but it's my favorite thing to do. You know, when Rick and I were young, like a good day was a 3-movie day. Mm. That was a good day. And then, you know, you start having kids and you start having it gets really hard to have a 3-movie day. But I mean, I saw Secret Agent last night, which I hadn't seen, and I was just been talking about it all morning. I was just floored. But have you seen that film?
That and Ann Lee are the two movies I have not seen yet. So
okay, all right, good. Well, I've seen both of them. They're both like gonzo awesome. And they're not what you think they are. They weren't what I thought they were anyway. But yeah, I've seen a lot of the films this year, and I feel really happy to be part of this whole awards season in a season where people are so up on movies. You know, sometimes I hate when I see these articles like, yeah, we think this person's going to win the Oscar, but it's such a piss poor year for film. I mean, God, it's like winning the championship when everyone else is injured. You know, I mean, you want to win the finals when playing the best, right? You know, Sinners is amazing. Michael B. Jordan is incredible. Leo is incredible. Timothy Chalamet is incredible. Joel Egerton is unbelievable in Train Dreams. Dwayne Johnson is incredible in Smashing Machine. You know, it's like all these unbelievable performances that I feel really, really proud to be in the game with, you know?
Speaking of conversations about movies, I feel like you have been a part of some of my favorite conversations on screen, period. Obviously, we're talking about the before movies, but like plenty of other ones, Boyhood, et cetera, and Blue Moon included. I was wondering, as somebody who has seen seemingly everything, what your favorite conversations to watch in a movie have been? Are there two actors who really nail the particular moment of dialogue that you still think about?
One of the things that pops into my mind is Dog Day Afternoon with Pacino and Chris Sarandio. Sonny, you want me to go to Algiers with you? I've been trying to get away from you all summer.
Everybody in that movie. Oh my God. Everybody. Mr. Cazal. Yeah, yeah.
Kiss me. When I get fucked, I like to get kissed. It's like, I got to work with Sidney Lumet, and he wasn't like Linklater. He's not scared of dialogue. He understood that language and human expression is part of our reality, that it's not just a visual medium. Yes, it is a visual medium, but it's also able to utilize the power of language and the power of great writing. So, you know, when I think of great dialogue movies, Sidney pops into my mind, you know, 12 Angry Men, Network, Serpico, Dog Day Afternoon, you know, all these movies are ripe with unbelievable nuance of language.
Now, you just brought up Sidney Lumet, who I believe is a featured interview in the Paul Newman, Joanne Woodward project you did a few years ago. I am obsessed with Joanne Woodward. And of course, Paul
As
Newman. I think HUD's probably my favorite movie of the 60s. What did you get from doing that project? Like, what lasts with you about having dove into the world of these two people who had kind of very different presences on screen, but constantly belong together too?
Well, that is a fantastic question because they are so interesting. It's like one is the sun and one is the moon, you know, and they function in such beautiful balance. And one of the joys of making that documentary, you know, a lot of the documentaries about artists end in drug addiction and really sad stories of faded talent and lost integrity. And the Newman Woodward story is one about two really bright young people who fall in love and grow into mature, gorgeous, intelligent, responsible citizens. And it's very, was an unbelievable process. The thing was like 6 episodes, like 6 hours. And yeah, they go through their trials and tribulations, but they keep growing until at the end of their life, they're doing some of the best work of their life. And they're giving back hundreds of millions of dollars. These are people that gave away more money than they have. It's not like they're, you know, like, oh, wow, great. This billionaire gave away $1 million. All right, great. It's like that change could fall out of his pocket. Newman and Woodward, they built their life around being responsible citizens, and they also made great art, and they also stayed in love. What I loved about digging into it is that wasn't easy. It's not like God bestowed on them, like, oh, you shall be blessed, and you get to live a fairy tale life. No. They had the hard conversations. They cried tears. They lost children, and they kept working through it, you know? And yeah, I made that movie when I was 50, you know, that. And it was a great kind of meditation on how to look at embracing the values of what is good about getting older. You know, we're often told what's bad about getting older, but it's just because we don't really put a high value on wisdom, grace, and integrity. We're so superficial, you know? It's unbelievable. We just all like, but in Cool Hand Luke, he had killer abs, you know? And yeah, they were fucking sexy, man. You know, there's no doubt. But I don't know. I loved making it. And I thought it did a good job for me and my wife when we were working on of setting the compass of what your priorities are and giving you something to aspire for that's different than what average culture is kind of selling.
You've also been very vocal about who your kind of early acting mentors were. You obviously worked with Robin Williams early on. You talked about how you were really into River Phoenix. Philip Seymour Hoffman has come up. I was wondering, how have these longtime sort of beacons for you still resonated as you continue to work? Do you think of these people often as you're doing the work of acting?
Well, I do, but you also have to understand that one of the things that the press loves is, you know, what gets a good story is the sadness around people passing.
Yeah.
You know, and all the people you just mentioned are people we lost. And so, yeah, they occupy a space that is vulnerable in my psyche. And you know, I had a dream the other night about Natasha Richardson, you know, and she was in my first film I directed and I loved her. And although those people haunt you in a way that are different than the people who are alive, but who I also feel I'm getting a little tired of listening to myself talk about, you know, the people that we've lost, because there's so many wonderful people that inspire me who are alive. You know, I saw John Leguizamo's play the other day. It was absolutely brilliant. I saw Laurie Metcalf's play the other day. It was absolutely brilliant.
Just saw it too. She was unbelievable. Yes.
She is one of like the greatest actors that America, she's a national treasure. You know, I got to work with Peter Dinklage on The Lowdown this year, and those experiences of acting with him feed me. My friend Josh Charles has a new show coming out, and he's been so supportive to me over the years. And we kind of stare at each other across, like, are we staying true to ourselves? Are we staying true? You know, he was in Dead Poets Society with me. And so, you know, are you still the guy that we said we wanted to be? You know, like, and those friendships are very valuable. My friendship with Richard Linklater, obviously, you know, it needs to be talked about that Bobby Cannavale is responsible for my performance and Rose Byrne's performance, two of the best. He's kind of the secret MVP, right? Everything he touches. So I just want to shout out to the people who are alive too.
You know? Hell yeah, please. Oh no, I'm so glad you brought up that Laurie Metcalf performance because I believe that ended. And I just want to say that nobody stomps off a stage better than Laurie Metcalf. I was literally just laughing at the way she would leave the stage.
I tell you, I got to direct her once in a Sam Shepard play and it was like acting energy drink or something like that. If you ever think you're good at acting, go work with Laurie Metcalf and you realize you don't know nothing, you know, because she's an inspiration. And she has been since I was a kid. You know, what they accomplished with Steppenwolf, there's very few American theater companies that really rock the world and rock the way that we think about drama. And Steppenwolf did that. And so to have gotten to work with her and kind of absorb that energy, because it's rock and roll is what Steppenwolf is. I mean, whatever that magic that rock and roll is, they put it into theater. And it's vital and needed where theater doesn't become some kind of library erudite thing. It's alive and buoyant and sexual and spiritual. And so Laurie's hats off to her.
Ethan, thank you so much for being here. I mean, like, Blue Boon is such a pleasure. I mean, everything you've done is such a pleasure. I'm so glad you're still working with Richard Linklater. It's nice that some things can just continue and get better and better.
I hope so. I think this is just the beginning. We've just been warming up. The best is yet to come.
I'm glad to hear it. Thank you so much for being here.
All right. Thanks for having me.
Thank you to Ethan Hawke for joining us. You can watch Blue Moon On Demand right now. Okay, when we're back, it's more Keep It. Keep It is brought to you by Factor. New year, big goals, no time to cook. Factor makes it easy with fully prepared meals designed by dietitians and crafted by chefs so you can eat well without the shopping or cooking. Factor meals are made of quality, functional ingredients, including lean proteins, colorful veggies, whole food ingredients, and healthy fats. There are no refined sugars, no artificial sweeteners, and no refined seed oils. My favorite Factor meal currently is the smoky Gouda chicken. I eat the whole thing, basically lick the package. You can picture me doing that, right? It gets a little rabid in my house. Factor has 100 rotating weekly meals with options including high protein, calorie smart, Mediterranean diet, GLP-1 support, and ready-to-eat salads. Plus, there's a new Muscle Pro collection that supports strength and recovery. Factor meals are also never frozen, ready in about 2 minutes, and are no prep, no stress. I love the ease of Factor. I'm hopped up on Factor meals right now. They are there for me and my utterly lazy lifestyle. And yet they're really good if you care about cooking and good food too. I've never had a meal that was unsatisfying. I eat the whole thing. I eat the whole thing every time. Head to factormeals.com/keepit50off and use code keepit50off to get 50% off your first Factor box plus free breakfast for 1 year. Offer only valid for new Factor customers with code and qualifying auto-renewing subscription purchase. Make healthier eating easy with Factor.
Third Love makes bras that actually fit, so they know this. If your bra feels uncomfortable, the problem isn't your body, it's your bra. Third Love designs for comfort first. Soft fabrics, support that doesn't dig, pinch, or slip. Bras that feel good and look good under everything you wear. Shop Third Love and explore over 60 sizes, including AA through H, and half cup sizes you won't find anywhere else. Get $15 off your first purchase at thirdlove.com with code PODCAST15.
Award season is in full swing, which means there is yet another Timothée Chalamet picture to dig into. Chalamet starred alongside Gwyneth Paltrow, Odessa Azayan, Tyler, the Creator, and more in Josh Safdie's latest film, Marty Supreme. Now, Vinny, having seen the film, do you think it was worth having that giant blimp over LA?
I love stunts. I do. I love stunts and gags and promotional jokes. I think they're awesome. Before the movie came out, I didn't even know what it was. I went into an AMC and they had like a gumball machine filled with Martyr Supreme ping pong balls.
Oh.
And I immediately looked at it. I thought, oh, what is this? And one of the AMC people overheard me and they're like, do you want one? I said, I don't know, girl. Can I have one? He said, yes. And he gave me and my friends tokens to put in the gumball machine. And we all cranked out our own little Marty Supreme ping pong ball.
Oh, cute.
He was one of the first people there to see the gumball. I had no idea what the movie was about. I think that's great. I felt like I was a part of it, whatever the movie was. At that point, I was like, I don't care how good it is. It's just so fun. And then Timothée Chalamet all over the place on social media doing sketches with Drewski. Like assessing Drewski's strange little guests. Crazy for Timothée Chalamet to have stooped that far, but fun, you know?
Also, the hardcore promo going into this movie is also of a piece with the movie, which is about promo. Yeah. You know, like him like desperately trying to sell ping pong and himself as this celebrity. But you're right. I want to say I've gotten over it by now, but Timothée Chalamet being truly among the straightest people ever to live, I still have the embers of Call Me By Your Name in my mind. I'm not saying I need him to be that character, to be Elio, but it's like, man, you are a really good actor because you are a heterosexual for sure.
You think you would describe him as one of the straightest people ever to live?
Oh, excuse me. Everything about him is like vibing with Drewski. Did you just hear what you said?
I don't know. To me, it just strikes me as like a white person who sometimes is wearing a do-rag or whatever. Do you know what I mean?
But that's not gay exactly.
No, but I think sometimes he makes choices fashion-wise that, oh no, actually his fashion is pretty straight.
Yeah.
Now that I think about
street,
it,
like you know what
orange,
I mean? Yeah.
When he's wearing the orange suit, the orange leather suit, I'm like, oh, that's a straight guy outfit for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess you're right.
Maybe like it's flashy, but it's not flamboyant as we used to say.
Yeah, but it's not like tactful. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. But also it's like lending legitimacy to the Kardashians is one of the straightest things you can do. I know they have gay fans. I just don't know how it's possible.
You know who dresses really well and really gay? What's his name from Sing Sing?
Oh, Coleman Domingo.
Coleman Domingo.
Oh, I believe he was born in snakeskin.
It's unbelievably gorgeous, his clothes. Do you know what I mean?
Also just the timbre of his voice.
Oh, everything. The timbre, the clothes, the timbre.
The being gay, yeah.
Sorry, I'm having a realization that the word which I thought for years was pronounced timber is actually pronounced timbre.
I think it can be pronounced both ways. I took a history of jazz class in college, and they pronounced it timbre.
You took a history of jazz class in college?
Yes.
I love that.
Oh, yeah.
5, 6, 7, 8.
I know everything. Yes.
Yeah.
What did you think of Marty Supreme?
I thought Marty Supreme was a great movie.
Yeah.
I had a lot of fun. I was on the edge of my seat, obviously, 100% of the time because that character is messy and dangerous. And I don't know. I thought it was a lot like Uncut Gems, but I really liked it. I thought it was amazing.
I have to say, this movie plus Rose Byrne's If I Had Legs, I'd Kick You, the Jennifer Lawrence movie I just saw, Die My Love, this is the most stressful year of Oscar movies ever. They do not give you a moment's fucking peace in these movies. Also, like in Marty Supreme, he's a pretty funny character. There are funny moments and stuff. It is pretty much 2.5 hours of pure stress. And it's almost vignette style. He goes from one situation to another that are a little bit disconnected. But each one is just, I can't believe how much this character is going through and putting himself through.
And as someone who struggles with acid reflux, it was really intense to like have a big meal and watch that and constantly be like really like tense and balled up. I really liked it. I thought it was great. I don't know. I thought it was worth the promo. I almost wish every movie had that level of promo, even if it's like a small movie or even like a huge, ridiculous blockbuster, you know?
Yeah.
It just had a sense of humor about itself.
Totally.
I think, that I really liked and felt very relatable.
You're right. It's not a self-serious movie.
No.
You know, especially given how serious certain things in the movie are. Sometimes you just want to be in the thrall of a very cocky character.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's sort of like the Safdie brothers version of like Ferris Bueller's Day Off or something, where it's this one guy and the way he sees the world and he's running things and you just have to follow him. And you're like, well, he's the one making the calls. It's all on him if it falls apart, you know? And so you're kind of waiting for both him to succeed and to fail at the same time.
I often find him in the habit of, like categorizing movies for different family members, right? And I think Marty Supreme is definitely a movie for older brothers. Do you know what I mean? Marty Supreme is a movie for older brothers. Your older brother will love Marty Supreme. I thought it was a lot of fun, but I know if I bring my brother to it, he will be like gagged over Marty Supreme. In the same way that like Jack Reacher is a television show for dads,
totally.
Marty Supreme is a movie for older brothers.
This is an important categorization.
Yeah.
Because you're right. It is about like, I want to run things and I've decided I'm the hero of my own story, which feels very older brother. You know what I mean? Like, I elect myself to this position kind
also,
of thing.
Also, it's like, you know, there's cars, there's guns, there's knives. It's like, that's an older brother movie.
Who is your favorite non-Chalamet performance in the movie?
Oh, there were actually a lot of good ones. I was surprised to see Tyler, the Creator, in a period piece.
Yes.
He was a surprise. There was a lot of, like, surprise casting in that movie.
Oh, it is wild who's in this movie. Sandra Bernhardt is in this movie. Yeah. Fran Drescher plays
Fran
his mom.
Fran Drescher might have been my favorite. She was very, like, dressed down, very plain. She was just good. She wasn't in very much of it, but the part she was in, I was like, oh, Fran Drescher's doing a really good job. I can't totally recognize her as Fran Drescher.
Nagging him in a fun way, too.
Yeah.
The way he casts or his movies is pretty funny. Like, Kevin O'Leary from Shark Tank plays a major role in this. I am so sorry to say this MAGA head is really good in the movie. Sorry.
No, I won't. I won't say it.
I know. I think. But additionally, like, literally in the movie, his character says, I'm going to make you an offer. And the movie is so good, you don't groan at the Shark Tank reference.
Yeah, I'll be honest. I groaned a little
bit. Oh, did?
I think it's like, he's too famous for me to, like, suspend my disbelief at him just being a character. You know?
Yeah.
It was like, okay, we get it, you know?
He plays the husband of Gwyneth Paltrow's character, who is this movie star who basically retired from the screen. But Timothy Chalamet tries romancing her over the phone. He sees her pass by in a hotel. My fucking God, is it good to see her again. I just think she has her, like, frostiness, and yet this kind of, like, that Gwyneth Paltrow, like, limp sense of whatever, and yet she's in total control. Like, she feels like an old school movie star. It's really well cast.
It was good to see. And I've never seen her as like an old school movie star before.
Yeah.
So for her to be holding like a long cigarette and like smoking in the lobby of a hotel, great. Amazing. Also incredible job. I think wall to wall, everyone did a great job. Even Kevin O'Leary. I do think he did a good job. I thought he was distracting, but everything else
is
good.
It is a very weird choice. Like, why not just pick an actor?
Yeah, I wonder if there's maybe an actor who could have done that really well, who maybe, you know, could have used a job right now at a point in the industry when everyone needs jobs. Maybe we don't need to be, like, casting billionaires to be in movies. I guess I don't get it.
Right.
If indeed he is a billionaire, I have no idea.
I'm very confused about how much money everybody on Shark Tank has, because it feels both like a lie and like they're not making real deals.
It's really none of our business.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean?
It's rude to ask.
A show for moms.
Yes. Oh, quite. Yeah. Unless it's a CNBC marathon, then it's for your great grandparents. Yes.
In the hospital.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Right.
Because that's what they leave on.
Yes. Right. Precisely. I'm trying to think of what else I liked about this movie. Well, I will say, if I had a problem with it, did you see One Battle After Another?
I did. Yeah.
Okay. Another very entertaining movie. afterwards you get out of it, and I kind of felt like it was about nothing.
Yeah, I think that's fine. You know what I mean?
But that's just it. It's fine.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like for one battle after another to be the front runner for Best Picture, and this isn't quite in the same bracket, but it'll almost certainly get a Best Picture nomination. I would have liked it to have maybe a couple more themes that weren't just watch this tenacious asshole try to get his way.
Yeah.
And maybe sort of be confronted with emotional stakes at the end of the movie when, spoiler alert, his woman's child is born.
Have you seen The Plague?
No, not yet. I heard it was really good.
I'd seen The Plague right before Marty Zabrim. The ending is incredible.
Yeah.
Like, it's moving, it's interesting. The movie keeps you on the edge of your seat in a really different way, in a more intense way. So they're similar in that regard. But I think because the ending of that movie was so good, I do agree that maybe it would have been nice if Marty Zabrim felt a little more weighted. It would have been fine to me if that character, Marty Zabrim, ended like kind of with nothing in a really dark, sad place, you know? Like if he's just like in Japan alone playing ping pong, destitute. Like that would have been a fine ending too. But I think part of it was, I can't ruin the ending.
By all means.
Great. I think what they were trying to do is like a little bit of subtlety. Is he crying because he's so happy he has a child, or is he crying because now he's forced into this box of like, I have to be a father and I have to raise this child and I'm now going to be nobody, which is, for the entire movie, he never wanted to be nobody.
Yeah.
So I think there was supposed to be an element of subtlety there where you're trying to figure out why he's crying, but it really just felt like he was crying with joy, which was nice, but I think just fine.
Yeah.
To me. Yeah.
I think that's well said. I will say about Timothée Chalamet, if he wins the Oscar for this movie, and I have to say, that feels pretty inevitable at this point. Like, I don't think Leo is going to jump up.
He did a great job.
I don't think Leo is going to jump up with a win. We just had Ethan Hawke, who is fabulous. I don't think he's probably going to win the Oscar for this. It's not my favorite character he's ever played.
Really?
Yes.
I really like this character for him. I thought this was...
I like it. I think it's like a fun, cocky,
yeah,
you can't keep your eyes off him character. But I just want to say, when I watch Timothée Chalamet give these interviews and he's talking about how he's chasing greatness and he brings up people like Marlon Brando, etc., which by all means do that. I want people who know who Marlon Brando is. When I think of those actors, I think a big part of what they do are broad, scary characters who maybe have a moment of sensitivity at the end or maybe have a character turn. The best role he ever did was something Marlon Brando could not have done, and that was Elio in Call Me By Your Name. I hate when people underestimate that movie. He was fucking amazing in it.
Yeah.
The slowness of the film, the gentleness of his feelings mixed with, you know, if you ever read that book, it's like a wash in inner dialogue. Like, it feels unfilmable. And yet, in this movie that has no narration, literally just looking at him, you feel like you get all of it.
I mean, it's so amazing. And Dune is also awash with inner dialogue, but he managed to do it.
That probably is his second best to me.
Yeah.
Yeah, as Paul Atreides. Yeah.
I guess it was just cool to see him. Sometimes with Timothée Chalamet, I guess I don't necessarily know a ton of guys in real life who kind of look like Timothée Chalamet. Do you know what I mean? He's got a very specific appearance.
He's a
kind
clavicle
of a smaller
with
guy.
Feet. Yes. Yeah.
So I think it was cool to see him as this character, which is, I think, definitely someone I could see him as in real life, which is just kind of this small kind of ping pong player who's very like self-important and obsessed with himself. I'm like, oh, that to me is very believable, you know? Sometimes in the more fantastical things, it doesn't always click with me that like Timothée Chalamet is that guy, but he did a great job, I think.
I think you're probably right that he has to relate to this character because it feels like him. In the promo, he's sort of giving that like, come one, come all to this giant, you know, movie experience. Like there's a P.T. Barnum quality to the Marty character, who is based on a real person,
and
by the way.
I'm sure so much of the bravado was on purpose. Like the Marlon Brando stuff was, I'm sure, ramping up for this movie specifically. You know?
Which
I think also is very smart. Be a little weird in interviews. You know? Why not?
By the way, Odessa Azayan, I kind of am surprised she's not more in the conversation for this movie.
Oh,
great performance. I mean, like, as somebody who wants another Oscar nomination for Gwyneth Paltrow, I can't in good faith give it to her when Odessa had more scenes and was given more to do.
She was incredible. She was, it's me saying this about everyone all the time, but I do think she did a really good job.
No, when you watch, she's on I Love LA, And you, that's a performance you watch and think, oh, that's amusing. I don't know that I'm watching an acting powerhouse right now. And in this movie, she is extremely commanding and hard to stop watching and a good match for Marty.
Yeah. And I also believed her lie. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
She lies in the movie and I didn't realize it was a lie. It totally threw me for a loop. I gasped when that mascara ran off of her face.
That was gasped. That's a very funny scene.
Yeah.
Almost Scooby-Doo level, like bad guy deception.
when they're yelling in that home when his parents are asleep, I was shocked. That's one of the hardest things for me to sit through when I watch a movie is someone embarrassing themselves or someone disrupting someone else's parents. So I'm like sitting down like quiet. But they can't stop hollering. And we all know people who are like that who just cannot stop hollering. She did a great job. She killed it.
Also, I must say that the look of this movie is also fab. Like they really capture like the early 50s and just like everyone being a little paler than usual, you know, it has almost a film noir quality to it.
Yeah. Tyler, the Creator, I think they gave him a receding hairline.
Yeah.
An interesting joke. And at first I was watching and I was like, is he supposed to be older? And then I was like, no, that's kind of a weird judgment on my part. A lot of guys have receding hairlines who are younger. It's totally normal. They just made him a normal guy, you know?
P.S. By the way, speaking of musicians giving great performances in movies, if you haven't seen the Rose Byrne movie, If I Had Legs, I'd Kick You, A$AP Rocky, so good in them. All right. What did you think of Marty Supreme? Actually, I want to say maybe it's more of a Best Picture nominee than I'm thinking, even though one battle after another is almost certain to win. Anyway, tell me all your thoughts. We'll be right back with our favorite segment of the episode, Keep It. And we're back with the snarkiest part of our episode. It's Keep It. Vinny, what are you saying Keep It to today?
I'm so hesitant to like make fun of movies because I think every movie is a miracle at the end of the day.
Well, let me say, even as like a very mean critical person, I agree. It's impossible to get a movie made.
But I think sometimes a conversation needs to be had. And I do think it's time to have a conversation about Avatar because I saw Avatar Fire and Ash. And that is one of the most racially weird, strange movies I've ever seen. I don't know what the message is. So much of it is about like, these characters who are, they're Na'vi, right? They're blue people, but they used to be white people first, and now they're blue people. And the only blue people with like special magical powers are the ones who were white first, and everyone's kind of like obsessive over them. This movie specifically is about a little white boy who got left behind by the humans and how all the Na'vi should accept him because, you know, he's one of you guys now. We left him behind. I don't know. I wasn't gagging over it. I thought it was a strange choice. Neytiri, Zoe Saldana's character, keeps referring to the humans as the pink people, as like a pejorative, which is very strange to me because if I was the Na'vi, right, if I was a 10-foot tall blue alien, 10 feet tall, I don't know that the first thing I would call humans is pink, right? It would probably be like short.
Yeah, I'd
probably
elves call them, or something. Yeah,
I don't know. I figure out some pejorative for being teeny tiny little bugs or something. But he's specifically using the word pink. I don't know, because the humans are allegorical for white people. Everything is very strange. I didn't like the movie. It's 3 hours long. And it's like, I don't know, if you're not Lord of the Rings, the unmitigated gall to make a movie 3 hours long. And every fifth word in that movie, mind you, is bro. Every fifth word in that movie, I swear to God, is bro. Watch out, bro. Love you, bro. Let's go, bro. There's a line in that movie that's take that, buttholes.
No.
Take that, buttholes. Something the human boy yells out. I don't think it's anyone's fault. I think it's, I don't, I don't think it's anyone's fault.
I think it might be James's.
No, I don't think it's anyone's fault. Listen, I think it's a beautiful movie. I love the science fiction of it. I love like the biology of Pandora. Not totally sure why aliens on a different planet need to be like sexy and have breasts. Like that's an interesting choice, but you know, it is what it is. We got to get people in the theater somehow.
Look, I'm aware that these movies are epic. I am blown away that the movie is 3 hours and 20 minutes long.
Yeah.
Like David Lean would, like Lawrence of Arabia, like that's acceptable. Gone with the Wind. She goes through, well, like 70 marriages in that movie.
Yeah.
That's fine. I believe these are thin aliens in combat.
There was no reason for it. There's so much to talk about that the shortest way to describe it is racially weird. It's just you're like sitting there kind of like a little bit uncomfortable the entire time, not sure what they're trying to say or like needs to happen, but it's often boring. It's a little repetitive. Visually, it's really pretty. There's a lot of pretty colors and cool animals and they're like doing great things.
Yeah, I feel like he doesn't have the bandwidth for that kind of conversation and maybe should have just left it on the, let's just keep it bro to bro level in terms of combat and not go any deeper than that.
And look, I thought the first Avatar was fine. You know, I thought it was a fine movie. Then I watched the second one and they lost me a little bit. And I think after this one, I cannot go back.
Well, unfortunately, my keep it is in the same realm as yours, and it involves the maestro of Avatar himself.
I'm sorry, James.
James Cameron, who dredged up an argument I've heard 10,000 times and is never true, and I'm going to read what he said. He goes, I don't think about the Academy Awards that much. Intentionally, I don't think about that at this point. I don't try to make a movie to appeal to their sensibility. They don't tend to honor films like Avatar or films that are science fiction. Sci-fi is almost never properly recognized. Denis Villeneuve made these two magnificent Dune films, and apparently these films make themselves because he wasn't even considered as a director, not even by the Directors Guild.
What?
First of all, James, nobody has been more excited to win an Oscar than you, where you literally said, I'm the king of the world, a quote from your own movie, as you won the Oscar. So let's not pretend it's not exciting, not a boon for a director, period.
He said, I'm king of the world, as he won an Oscar?
Yes, he did.
I love Hollywood.
And secondly, both the Dune movies and both the Avatar movies were nominated for Best Picture. It sounds like what you're saying is you don't like that they weren't given every award in sight. And the fact of the matter is, James Cameron, you aren't interested in other movies. All you are interested in is one genre of film. That's not what the point of the Oscars is. It's not a genre category. It's to celebrate all movies and to celebrate movies that specifically aren't blockbusters. If we don't have the Oscars, there is no centralized conversation about movies that don't make $1 billion at the box office, period. I hate when people pretend like, oh, it's like this, you know, extra conversation we add that we don't need. Can't we just respect art as it is? We can't, actually. We need something formal in place so that we can talk about all these movies in conversation. You remember movies like Marty Supreme if you're comparing it to Blue Moon, if you're comparing it to whatever else is coming out at the time. I think the Oscars engender a real and fun and thoughtful conversation. And does it get wrapped up in some like odious campaigning here and there? I do think it does, but it's also important.
Yeah. I love science fiction, and I do think it often gets the credit it deserves. I guess I don't know.
Right, they're gigantic hits.
Yeah, they're gigantic hits. Like, I'm supposed to sit here and pretend like people didn't like Arrival. Do you know what I mean? Like,
right.
People loved it. I think just with this one specifically, it is kind of, Avatar is something you go to see for the shapes and colors. It's not necessarily for the story, which is so, like, strange and a little bit overwrought. And I don't know, like, the casting choices are weird. Why, instead of introducing a new character, did you have to put Sigourney Weaver in the body of a 14-year-old Sigourney Weaver as an avatar?
I do think there should be a TV show like The Comeback that is just about Sigourney Weaver being asked to be a slinky 14-year-old teenager in a sci-fi movie, and we just watch her go about her day.
And by the way, that character is like being set up as this messianic figure that can speak to the Na'vi people's god. Isn't it a little weird that that character had to be a clone of like a human on that planet and isn't one of the Na'vi people? Like, isn't that a little strange? I just think if you're giving magical powers to someone, why do they have to be a white person giving them magical powers? You know what I mean?
You know what we're putting Sigourney Weaver in? The new Tomb Raider show?
I love Sigourney Weaver. She deserves it.
She deserves everything that comes around. I was going to say, I'm disappointed that she's not the Tomb Raider. Please. Imagine if she were leaping from cliff to cliff.
Yeah. Oh my God, what did I just see her in?
Probably most movies. She's in all of them.
Yeah, she's in all of them. I just saw her in something. It was great. I love Sigourney
Weaver.
It
was Heartbreakers, which is one of the great comedies of all time.
Oh.
Gene Hackman, may you rest.
Who are you pointing to?
Just God.
Just God?
Lingers over the studio.
Just God.
Yeah.
No, I can't remember, but I
Working Girl, she's amazing, and I could go on and on.
Yeah.
She's Year of Living Dangerously, plenty of movies.
Alien. Oh. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
She's great.
She was like an unknown when they cast Alien. Do you know why they picked her? They showed test audiences all these actresses, and they said that she reminded them the most of Jane Fonda. And so they picked her.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Holy shit. Yeah. People say that about me all the time
as well. Oh, yeah. Jane Fonda? Is that
Jane Fonda? Oh, there's no way to know.
Where's Lily? Anyway.
Who is Lily, bitch?
Toblin.
Oh, God.
Oh, my God. Keep up.
I can't be here.
Keep up. Vinny, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Also, you're a fucking delight. Thanks for seeing every movie in sight for us this week.
Oh, thank you guys. I really buckled in.
Good.
Yeah. I saw Marty Supreme at the Grove, by the way, for this podcast.
Oh, yeah. That's where I see most movies now. How do we feel about that?
The Grove?
Yeah.
I think it's fine because I'm on Stubbs. I'm a Stubbs diva.
Oh, please. And so then I stop right AMC into Nordstrom, too.
Well, I go to the Grove and I eat at the little cash-only Indonesian place at the Grove.
Oh, do you know where I eat the empanada stand at the Grove?
Oh, okay. But if I'm with friends and I'm feeling a little bad, I do the Cheesecake Factory at the Americana and I sit on the balcony.
Oh, outside? Watch the fountains?
Exactly. Yeah.
You're like, time. Play that Michael Bublé.
Oh, yeah. Love him.
Yeah. Where can people find you if they're looking for you?
You guys can find me on Instagram, TikTok, and Threads at VINN_AYY. You can also see me on Platonic and a movie that's coming out probably soon called Judgment Day. Yeah.
Fabulous.
Of course.
Thank you for joining us, Vinny Thomas.
Thank you for having me.
And thanks to the fabulous Ethan Hawke for joining us. And thanks to you for coming back to us in 2026. We'll be back with more Keep It next week. See you then. Don't forget to follow Crooked Media on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. You can also subscribe to Keep It on YouTube for access to full episodes and other exclusive content. And if you're as opinionated as we are, consider dropping us a review. Keep It is a Crooked Media production. Our producer is Bill McGrath. Our associate producer is Kennedy Hill. And our executive producers are Louis Fertel, Ira Madison III, and Kendra James. Our digital team is Delon Villanueva, Claudia Shang, and Rachel Gajewski. This episode was recorded and mixed by Jarek Centeno. Thank you to David Tolles, Kyle Seglin, and Charlotte Landis for production support every week. Our head of production is Matt DeGroot. Our production staff is proudly unionized with the Writers Guild of America East.